We're doing the Sefer Amidot. We're up to Shar HaGa'va, page Resh Tzadi Tet. And the Magen Midivna had said that Ga'va, false pride, haughtiness, is when a person lies to himself. It's when a person overestimates himself. And this is something which is a constant in everything a person does. And other types of faults in one's personality can lay dormant, can remain in potential and not be realized. Each one expresses itself at a specific time. Aval yeter aleihem hagava. We're holding three lines from the bottom. When it comes to false pride, when it comes to haughtiness, that trait, that fault, is worse than the other faults in one's personality, because it is ever present, and it never remains dormant. It is never a potential that remains unrealized. Once a person reaches certain levels of haughtiness, it permeates everything he does. Being that what haughtiness is really that a person views himself so much greater, person thinks of himself as exceptional, he is exalted, he is noteworthy, and this affects everything he does, because it's all about him. Another reason why haughtiness is more severe than other faults is because it affects all other faults. Take note. Someone who's haughty has more potent anger. And his wrath can build up within because he's entitled. How dare they slight me? And the me is much bigger. So then he is more upset. He's more zealous. It has nothing to do with whether he's right or wrong. He might be right, but it's going to take on a different level because of his haughtiness.
The ego.
Yeah. The kinato meruba. He is more jealous. You know who I am? Why is he there and I'm not? He has much greater jealousy. Simchato atzuma ve'evlo kefula. When he's happy, his voice can thunder in happiness. When he's upset, he's double as upset as other people. So his emotions go to the extremities, and this is really a part of the lie that a person is living. And I would add to that I think part of what's at play is the fact that a person is living a lie causes him to be even more sensitive.
He's putting a lie on himself.
Yeah. When people develop a false ego, so then they're always protective of that. The false ego plays out and they're going to show overconfidence, greater happiness. Everything is extreme because it's not real. Everything revolves around the false ego. At the end of the day, it's all about that.
Is it better to live in that way if it's leading him in a positive direction? Or otherwise, and like other people do, might make him aware of it, are going to hurt their pride I'm very careful with it. I see just so many people. And who am I to like
most often we say people don't do well when we face them with a mirror. Usually it's not good to show a person their faults. Usually it's not the way to help them build themselves either. Now we ourselves have a hard time looking in the mirror. So any person would rather someone who lovingly guides them to what's right rather than someone who abruptly tells them, you're this. A few weeks ago, someone said over a story, which I think he said it in the name of the Rebbe of Babov, maybe. I don't remember. He said it in the name of one of the Rabbeim, who said that this is a story that helps a person understand haughtiness and humility. So it's a story worth quoting. The story goes, it's a story about Reb Zusha. And Reb Zusha used to talk to himself, he used to call himself Zusha. He always called himself by first name. And so the story goes that there was someone who was considered one of the leaders of the community in the same town as Reb Zusha. And there was this important couple that was getting married. So the father of the groom came to this person and said, we want you to officiate the wedding. So he said, of course. They invite him. And he says to himself, no way I'm showing up on time. A man of my stature has to show up when everyone's ready. I'm not showing up there. He waits. Maybe they'll send him a car. Maybe they'll send him some people to bring him. And he's waiting and no one shows up. And finally he's deeply frustrated. He says, okay, I'll show them. He shows up two hours late. He finds everyone happy and dancing. And the couple's already married. He asks what's going on. So they tell him, he's sitting there seething the whole meal. One second, we'll get to the end. He's sitting there seething the whole meal. And every time they bring him something, he begrudgingly eats it. And at the end of the meal, he goes over to Reb Zusha. Unfortunately, I don't remember all the details of the story, but the story goes more or less like this. Reb Zusha said, he asked him what happened. So he says, well, when I got the invitation, I was so excited that these people think to invite little old Zusha. I came here a half hour before the wedding to celebrate with them. I was so happy that these people want me to be a part of their simcha. I was here bright and early. And everyone got excited and we danced and we were happy. And we waited. And the person who was responsible for officiating the wedding didn't show up. So they waited a little more and they waited a little more and they waited a little more until finally they said, we can't wait anymore. So they said to Zusha, Zusha, you officiate the wedding. And Zusha said, me? No, how could I officiate the wedding? You asked that respectable person, let's wait for him. And they said, we waited so long, we can't wait anymore. The guests, the band, everything. So they couldn't and they forced me to do it. So Zusha went up there and I was so happy and they were so happy. I said, wow, I couldn't imagine that they invited me to the wedding. And now they're even letting me officiate the wedding. So I was standing there shining from ear to ear. I was so happy with the bride and the groom. I danced under that wedding. And then I officiated the wedding. They got married. I danced with them to the Cheder Yichud. I stood there. I went back. I gave such a hug and a thank you to the head of the to the father of the groom, and together we walked hand in hand to the table. We sat down. He let me sit right next to him. Zusha was shocked. Little old Zusha, he's letting me sit next to him at the head table. He said, but I saw when you came in, you were at home upset because no one gave you enough honor, so you were upset. Then you showed up, you didn't get to officiate the wedding, so you were upset. Then you sat at the head table, you felt you should have gotten more honor, so you were upset. And now we're ending the wedding, and you're even more upset. Little old Zusha is happy, and you, oh, you're upset. So, the story teaches us a lot about what happens when a person has false pride, when his ego gets the better of him. So then he's always expecting for more. Like Mark Twain said, when people compliment me, I always feel like they didn't say enough, and I'm embarrassed that I feel like they didn't say enough, but I do. I do feel like they didn't say enough. The false pride makes a person always expecting, he's always expecting more, and he's always frustrated with what he has, and he's never really happy. Whereas when a person is humble, so he's truthful, so he knows his faults, so he's willing to live with his faults, so then he doesn't have great expectations because he knows how imperfect he is. So then everything that happens he can really be happy with. Sof davar, bottom line, says the Magen Midovna, Hagava timshol benefesh b'chol kochoteh pratiyot u'b'chol evrei gufot. False pride, ego, affects the soul in all its applications, in all the strengths, in all the specific applications of the soul, u'b'chol evrei gufot, in all the limbs, ad kilot imtza evaru koach asher nirda lo iten rechobo. You can't find a limb or a strength within the human body that isn't affected by the stench of ego. Where the more ego a person has, the more false pride a person has, the more it affects every limb he has. Kemamar, as the verse says in Proverbs, Rum inay muchav lev nir reshaim chatat. Let me tell you a story. So I'll tell you a story. I was once asked to help someone's wheelchair up the stairs. So we're carrying the wheelchair from front and behind. And when we land on the top landing, so the guy stops me and says, smile. So I smiled. He said to me, look, the strength you have, God gave you. The eyes you have to see, God gave you. The education you have, God put you in a place where you got education. If you think about life, 98% of life has been defined for you. There's this little 2% that you have control over, but 98% you didn't decide. Then haven't they decided for you? So why don't you take that 2% and do something good with it and put a smile on your face? So I said, okay, you got a good point. Now, he said it nicer than I'm saying it now, but the idea is true. So when you speak about pride, I think the first thing we have to realize is that ordinarily when people have pride, they're taking credit for a lot that they have no right to take credit for. And that's why most pride is false. When you ask, does Moshe Rabbeinu know he's Moshe Rabbeinu? Is a person allowed to know his strengths, not only his weaknesses? So the thing that's generally said, what I grew up on, what I was taught since I was a kid, is that to be modest doesn't mean that you don't know what you are. It means that you realize what you are, but you don't have false pride about it. You can say, okay, I took advantage of this time and I did this that was right, but there were other things I did that were wrong, so I can be honest about who I am. That's true humility. This is what I was taught since I was a kid. Then I found the commentary of Rav Chaim Mivolozhin on Pirkei Avos, written by his disciple, where it doesn't say that. Says that true humility means you don't even know your own value. Boom. Not what I expected, right? Since I was a kid, that's not what I learned. Then, I realized something else. Do we have a regular Siddur here? One of the Siddurim that have the Ramban, the Geret Ramban inside the flag. Some Siddurim have on the inside flat the Ramban's letter.
By looking, the Moshe Rabbeinu example is the only one that seems to not hold true. It's problematic because everyone else, you don't know if they had that 98%, they'd be much greater than you. But on the other hand, you could say, well, maybe the one is 98% his gift, so in that sense, even he fits. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. What does the Ramban say in his famous letter to his son? He says, I'm skipping to the middle. And with these traits that I've described, don't get angry, be a God-fearing person, think about where you're coming from, where you're going to in life. When you have these traits, you'll be happy with your lot. And when you will have this trait of humility, להתבושש מכל אדם, to be embarrassed of all people, ולהתפחד ממנו, and to have a certain element of fear, a certain element of respect from each person, ומן החטא, and from sin, אז תשרה עליך רוח השכינה וזיו כבודיו חיי עולם הבא. Then you will have the holy presence with you, the honor of God upon you, the world, the life in the world to come. So the first clue we get is when the Ramban speaks about anava, about humility, he speaks about being embarrassed of other people. What do I have to be embarrassed? If humility is the way I grew up with, the way that most people assume, I know what I'm worth. I just don't take false pride in it. I don't take credit for what really is not my doing. So then what does this mean? Next line in the Ramban, "V'ata b'ni da'urei." Now, son, I want you to know and take note. Ki amitgeh b'libo al abriyot moredu b'malchut shamayim. When a person is proud over God's creatures, he is rebelling against the heavens. Ki mitveru b'lefush malchut shamayim. He is adorning a garment that is heaven's garment. God is the one that wears pride. V'amitgeh lev adam. And what should a person take pride? Im be'osher, if it's about wealth, Hashem gives wealth. If it's honor, God gives honor. How does a person, in his wisdom, so Hashem is the one that grants wisdom, so then what's a person taking pride in? So how do you want to be humble? I'll tell you how to be humble your whole life, says the Ramban. Kol dvarecha yu benachat. Whenever you speak, speak calmly. V'roshcha kafuf, your head should be bent slightly downward. V'enecha yibitu lemata l'aretz, you should look down. V'libecha lemala, your heart should look up. When you look, when you talk to people, there should be this element of respect that you don't look at them straight in the eye all the time. And look up to everyone. If he's wise or wealthy, you have to honor him. If he is poor and you are wealthy, or you are smarter than him, so then you should think to yourself that you have more sins than he does. Because if he does a sin, it's by mistake. And when you do a sin, it's on purpose. How does that fit with the first definition of humility? He continues, he goes on. He says, don't yell at people. Always speak calmly. Always think of Hashem. Okay, say there. But this idea only fits, to my mind, if we go with the definition I found in Rav Chaim Velazhin on Pirkei Avos, that being humble means I don't stand there and think here's what I have right. Being humble is more about realizing no, I know what I have wrong. I'm not sure if the Ramban is 100% the way Rav Chaim Velazhin is, I definitely see two paths here in understanding humility. Whether it means I know what I'm worth, but I don't take false pride in it, or I say, I'm not sure I'm worth that much. I can realize where I'm missing too, or where I'm not that great. Or to go as far as Rav Chaim Velazhin, I don't even know how much I'm worth. I'm not sure which way humility goes. But I think even if I know what I'm worth, I don't think that leaves room for pride. You know, we each have our task, we each have our duties. If I'm living up to mine, so that's between me and my Creator. What does that have to do with how I view my fellow man?
So the example that I brought up of a rich athlete.
One has to understand what he was trying to do when he made those statements. Meaning, whenever you read a statement, there are two ways to understand it. You can just take it literally, or you could say, okay, there was a context for that statement, and he was trying to affect something, like the Rambam writes about Rav Haigon. Certain things were said because the generation needed to hear it in a certain context. That doesn't mean that would be what he would say in other contexts. Yeah? I'm saying you have to know the context of that conversation.
Translating pride and humility a little differently than English.
would you think, let's say, taking pleasure is very different than taking pride in something? It's healthy to take pleasure, but we always miss, kind of translate it like Jewish pride. Pleasure, of you, what did you do to be born Jewish? it's a problem. I'm probably not translating it in my mind the way that he's writing it in the Hebrew. Anyway, I'm sorry, I think you had a question.
Nachum, you... Okay. I'm with you.
If we say that everything good that Hashem gave you, like I should be proud of, the girl should be proud that he's smart and he was Hashem, and you know, he should be put like, so then how come we don't say the same thing about like a person sort of a shot and a sinner? And how come, like we don't say, well, Hashem put him in a situation where he became a sinner?
Whoa, it's a lot different. My God, what is let the rabbi answer, but yeah.
There's, we said there is that 2% of free choice. You know, it's true that a person, for certain sins, we say he's a tinok shenishba, he didn't know any better. That's true. We don't hold that, but that's not a rasha, a wicked person. Well, every person should learn and know better than being a wicked person. And depending on how much he had the capacity to learn, he has the responsibility to learn. You're right that there are scenarios where we say he couldn't have known better. That's definitely true. We don't look at someone who grew up in an environment where they had no concept of what's right and what's wrong, that they're eating pork, so they didn't know they weren't allowed to eat pork.
He may be judged on other things. If he stole, if he was brought up in a house of murderers, and he raised himself to be a thief, so we have to define, but Russia is very different than intelligence. That's based on what you do with your gifts. Intelligence is an IQ. It's a, like you say, it's a gift. To sit there and think I'm better than the next guy because I won the lottery is crazy. I'm lucky. I'm more fortunate.
Maybe Hashem made me angry and bloodthirsty, so that it's not really like...
Well, but you, again, at the level here, we have to run a society and judge everybody the same. I can't say because you're born in Galatia that way, you don't have to go to jail. But maybe Hashem is going to judge you a lot differently, but there are all kinds of ways you can channel that bloodlust. You know, the military's always looking for folks. I mean, you throw a way on the you can do it positively.
I did that once, huh?
Yeah, hey, you're a good soldier, right? There you go. Hey, sorry.
So, are we okay? Yeah? Yehuda?
I read an article on Chabad.org, and it talks about the ego and the ego. It's basically helping you to have an ego so that you can develop better yourself. You can have, you can work on your dream to become true, but then have a humility at the same time. It's all about like a balancing, not both are important in a way. Otherwise, for example, if you keep on belittling yourself in front of other people, especially in the business world, they're just gonna step on you. Like they're gonna keep you, step on you, and you become a trash. And the office, for example. But then,
I don't think that's about self pride. That's about self worth.
But also like.
The halacha assumes you have self-worth. If someone's going to come and start punching you, you're supposed to stand up and punch them back. That's self-worth. That's not self-pride. Anyway, I have to have self-worth, and it's true. If I don't have self-worth, no one's going to give it to me. And self-worth means, in many situations, standing up for one's rights. But that's not false pride. That's a different question. Yeah. And different people will have self-worth on a different level. Someone said, I've been living a life that I'm so embarrassed of that the only strength I have to get out of bed in the morning is this realization that if God granted me life this morning, then obviously He hasn't given up hope on me, so I shouldn't give up hope on myself. So that's a level of self-worth too, that realization. Look, God didn't give up on me, I shouldn't give up either. And sometimes that's something a person can hold on to, because a person on his own feels like, I've given myself so many goals, and every time I don't attain those goals, So many times I told myself I'm going to keep Shabbos, and I didn't. I told myself I'm not going to cheat on my taxes, and I did. So many things that I'd like to be different, but when the test comes in front of me, I don't stand up to the test. So a person can be very frustrated with himself. And then sometimes that angle of self-worth, what the Netivot Shalom describes as the little spark of hope, that at the end of the day, I have a soul. God gave me life. So I still have expectations of myself. It's also important. But that's a worst-case scenario. A person should have healthy self-worth that doesn't have to fall back on that.